'cause you're only a man, and a man's got to learn to take it. Try to believe, though the going gets rough, that you got a hand tough to make it. History repeats itself, try and you succeed. Never doubt that you're the one, and you can have your dream.
Put my mic on!
Stop turning it off, please!
Please.
Gosh.
Gosh. So that's the GOAT, Mike Francesa. And for those of you who don't know, GOAT is an acronym, the greatest of all time. It's the Cap Figure Podcast, episode 32. I told Tom, wasn't aware because he, even though he idolizes Mike Francesa, Tom doesn't listen regularly, unfortunately, that he's doing the David Ortiz Mike Francesa, announced his retirement a year in advance. And he acts like when callers are like, Mike, I'm really going to miss you in a year. He's like, yeah, it's a long time away. I don't know, blah, blah, blah. It's like you made it conscious. Everything you do is calculated, Mr. Francesa. You knew what you were getting, the David Ortiz treatment. So he plays it down, but he's fake.
I bet in his personal life he doesn't play it down. Like every time he goes to Taco Bell, he's like, come on, guys, don't you know it's my last year? Like, give me some free quesadillas.
Give me the free extra sauce. Give me the hot mustard.
Look,
you're retiring, McDonald's.
Look at my son. He needs a soda.
So this is the Cap Figure Podcast, episode 32. Who are some famous number players who wore number 32, Tom?
So 32 is kind of a dense number, so in terms of the most years wearing 32, as well as the highest WAR while wearing 32, it's legendary pitcher Steve Carlton. He wore the number pretty much every single year he played, 23 years total. So then moving on that list, we've also got Sandy Koufax, Roy Halladay, and Dennis Martinez.
Put your computer in front of the mic so you can have the mic in front of you. So Dennis Martinez, that's a very racist name. So anyway, cool. Good 32s. I was barely listening.
Sandy Koufax.
I was working on okay. He's the greatest. Him and Hank Greenberg are my idols. So, all right. So we're in the middle of MLB lookout, right? Where we're looking at every team. And again, it's the horrible title I blurted out week one, but we here at Cap Figure are committers. We're not quitters. Is the trademark. And so you know, we're sticking with that title, but we're going team by team in baseball and just looking at their last couple seasons and their off season and going into next season. But because the Hall of Fame voting results came out yesterday, and we haven't really ever talked about the Hall of Fame on the show for this episode and the next episode, we're going to do a Hall of Fame look at, right?
The look at detour.
The look
or
at
the detour look at.
Oh, I wish I had a sound effect. The look at detour. Like a tire, yep. Screeching, changing direction, but it won't be as abrasive as tire screeching. It'll be a very smooth break, right? So we're gonna do this, right? We got lots of stuff. We're gonna first briefly just like, for anyone who doesn't know how the Hall of Fame on the most basic level works, briefly review that, because I heard Hall of Fame discussions forever, like on WFAN, the station Mike Francesa is on. And I'd be very frustrated when they're like, oh, he has 50%, but they'd never give the context of how many he needed. Like,
right.
They forget to give the most basic. That's a small deal. And then Tom made a ballot of who his ballot would be, like a legitimate ballot, as if he were, and he will be one day, but as if he were a voter. And then I made a ballot we'll do next episode of current players who are either – who are going to be in the MLB, and that's next episode. And then either we have players in the purgatory, like a mini list of players who are in the 5 years in between, because you have to be retired for 5 years to be eligible, and we'll get to them in this episode if we have time, or if not, it'll be next episode. So, Tom, what's the Hall of Fame?
Yeah, so,
is that too basic? I'm starting too early.
No, that's not too basic. I mean, you know, just to water it down to its most basic level, it's a museum in upstate New York. The town is called Cooperstown. It was, for a long time, people thought that that was actually where the first baseball game was played. That found out to be a myth. So basically, you have this museum that works between the Baseball Writers Association of America, Major League Baseball, as well as the Players Union. So basically, you know, there are tons of exhibits on players who aren't inducted into the Hall of Fame, but there's one wing specifically when you walk in. It's right in the middle of the building. There is basically this big annex, and all around it there are plaques, and that's what's referred to as being inducted to the Hall of Fame, is when you get one of those plaques.
Okay, because there are players, and that's based on who they think is the best players of all time, right?
Right.
Theoretically, that's the rough. Because there's other players who have, like, you know, little pieces of their playing gear in there, but they're not in the Hall of Fame, right?
Sure. So, like, you know, 90% of the museum has to do nothing with players who are actually inducted.
Word,
exhibits even on, like, Shoeless Joe Jackson, Jose Canseco, McGuire. Pete Rose has got plenty of stuff in there, but he's just not inducted with a plaque.
Okay, so... So the very basics are what? You need to be 5 years retired out of baseball, right? You need to have, and then all the, how do you know roughly how many, I know it changes year to year, how many writers can vote. Do you know the roughly the size of writers field voting for it?
I think that it was somewhere in the neighborhood of 800.
Okay. No, that's fair. It changes year to year because some writers retire or you lose eligibility somehow, right? Or you can give it up.
Yeah, the number has dwindled because starting about 10 years ago, this whole sabermetrics movement kind of came in. And the way that the eligibility for writers was once you got the ability to vote, which was putting in 10 years at like an accredited newspaper or, you know, nowadays like Fangraphs, Dave Cameron, who's the chief editor there.
Right.
Like
10
that
years
counts.
There.
You need 10 years. Yeah. Then, you know, you get approved by the writers who already vote. Generally, if you have 10 years and you do good work, they'll bring you in. But, you would never lose that eligibility. So even if you quit being a writer and you went and covered like soccer in like South America, you would still be able to vote. That made no sense. So that's one of the things the Baseball Writers Association has changed up. If you're out of covering specifically MLB baseball for more than 5 years, you're off.
Okay.
Which, that's fair.
Absolutely, because... This is the problem people reference with other Hall of Fames, just that guys aren't aware, or votes for the MVP, right, for football MVP, that guys just, some guys just look at stats and they have a vote. So anyway, all right, and then the last thing is just for the minimum eligibility, right, you need to get, so your first year eligible is 5 years out of your career after retiring. You need to get a minimum of 5%, right, of the votes to stay eligible.
Right.
If you don't appear on the ballot in your first year eligible, you can never be in the Hall of Fame?
Well, you can't be voted in through the Baseball Writers Association, but they have what are called like players committees. So once you miss that window, the players then can vote on you, say, down the road like 20 years later.
Okay, and for like a special clause if they miss somebody?
Yeah, but people, I mean, you still know the difference of the people who get in that way.
Right.
I mean, and the other way, obviously, is if you're a player, you can become a coach, a writer, a front office person, and you could get in through that way.
Right, but not as a player. Okay, and then also you need 10 years... I mean, you can only put 10 players on your ballot if you're a writer. You vote for 10 players. They need to
get 70 players.
Up to 10 players is the maximum. You can put less, and many writers do.
People have put in, like, blank ballots.
Right. And you need to, if you're a player, you need to get 75% of the votes to be inducted. There's no minimum or maximum number of inductees in a year, right? The maximum years you're allowed on the ballot now is 10. It used to be 15. Some guys were grandfathered in. And what, the last one just left who was grandfathered in to 15 years?
Yeah, Lee Smith was a reliever who retired, I believe, in the late 80s. And he just had his 15th year.
So he's out. Now it's 10 years, and then you're off the ballot. Okay,
right.
So what happened in this latest election? Who got in?
So last year... I think to start with this year, you need to look at last year. And last year, you had two basically like slam dunks. You had Ken Griffey Jr. and Mike Piazza, who we both knew were going to get in.
But yeah, because of back knee and steroid suspicion, they made him wait.
But
Piazza.
So sort of like the overriding themes coming into this one were, is Tim Raines going to get in because it was his last year on the ballot? And he's a player who's picked up a ton of steam coming into this year. I think when he first appeared on the ballot, he had a year where he had like 20%. So
And usually if somebody gets that low, it looks like they're not going to get in the life of their 10-year eligibility, right?
Right.
And, okay.
You know, summing up Tim Raines getting in with 86% this year, I mean, the internet and the advent of sabermetrics has helped his case.
How come? Like, what's his profile as a player, for those who don't know? A lot of steals guy, right?
Yeah, so he's, if you think of Ricky Henderson, he's basically like...
A white Ricky Henderson?
Well, he's not white, but he's like...
Figuratively.
Comparable to Ricky Henderson, but just a little bit lower. So, you know, when you're comparing the greatest, speedy outfielder who steals bases, who hits for some power, when you're comparing him to the greatest of doing that ever, you know, if you're 1B in that discussion, you belong. You know?
Yeah, unless that category is so specific that it's ridiculous. But that's not a very you didn't make that very narrow. That's a wide category of people. Like if it were like left-handed seventh inning specialist who mostly threw with a curveball, like I don't care about 1B. But anyway, so he got in Jeff Bagwell, who has been held back, right? Even though his numbers alone obviously would put him in the Hall of Fame. He's one of the best right-handed hitters of all time. At first base for the Astros and stuff. He's pretty ugly guy. Steroid suspicion, right? All this purgatory about steroids have had some writers hold him back, but he got in with what percent?
He actually led with 86.2%. So, yeah, you're right. His numbers, there were a couple of things going on why he didn't get in yet. He finished kind of right before a couple of big benchmarks. So, like, he had 449 home runs. He played 15 years, which is not
that's not long compared at all.
To, like, a lot of these other Hall of Fame candidates. So, to be fair, if you project out even, like, 2.5 more years, like, he's going to hit 500 home runs,
right?
He has a .297 career batting average, so he's right below 300. I think he definitely, there were suspicions of steroids. He was a player who, in the beginning of his career, you knew he was going to be good, but he just got better basically every single year, and he physically became massive.
Wait, so do you not agree that his numbers alone, he deserves to be in? Like that he was only had to wait these couple years because of steroids?
I think he would have been a border. I don't think he would have been in on the first
ballot.
So you
think his weight is appropriate, basically?
But I think how he got in is appropriate.
Okay, and then who else got in this year? Pudge.
The only other one was Ivan Rodriguez, who was on his first ballot. He ended up with 76%. We could talk about him a little bit more when we do my ballot, but I disagreed with that choice for him.
You would have rather had Vlad Guerrero, right? So let's get to your bracket, ballot anyway. So, this is Tom. If he had a ballot today, right? You did it as if it's a real ballot. Well, it is a real ballot, right? Let's get to it. Keep in mind, everybody, that Tom is very smart. If your ballot is worse, really, you are not. You're Tim Raines to Ricky Henderson. Your ballot is going to be worse because Tom is smarter than you, and there's just nothing you can do about it. So just listeners, really be warned. You're not going to feel very good about yourselves.
Respect. all right. So, yeah.
Is this in order from your most number one lock? Or are they in any order?
They're pretty much in any order.
Okay.
When we go through, I'll kind of tip on the players that I think you'll notice the players that I feel most strongly
Hit
about.
Me.
My first name was Tim Raines. I think he was sort of a no-brainer Hall of Famer. His WAR 7, which is basically the 7 best years of production in a player's career, was 42.2. So, simple division, that makes him a 6-win player for 7 years. When you add in and look at the life of his career, he had 808 stolen bases. He played Gold Glove center field for several years. The numbers just kind of add up, and I'm glad that he got in, and I think it speaks to, you know, sort of the greater renaissance of people understanding how valuable defense, fielding is defense, but like speed on the bases and, you know, plate discipline as well, because you're looking at a player who had 1,330 walks in his career. That's all.
All right, who's next? We'll unpack more. I'll ask more questions about somebody who didn't get in.
Yeah, so number two, again, Jeff Bagwell. He got in. He deserves it. You know, like we said, a little bit of a shorter career at 15 years. You know, his WAR 7 was 48.2, which was one of the highest. So, again, we're...
Amongst first basemen?
Well, just amongst, you know, like the players on the ballot. Oh, right. So he definitely showed that he had that peak.
And I think
we both like that.
No, that's smart. This is really interesting what you just referenced, though. When you were doing your research, because when I was doing my research for my ballot, I was comparing their WAR 7 to other players at that position, whether or not they're in the Hall of Fame. You were sorting it by the pool of available Hall of Fame eligible players.
That was where I weighted it more heavily. I definitely looked at other players at the position, but I thought the most fair way to compare players, especially with the backdrop of like the steroid era, was to, you know, basically look at their peers
against each other. Yeah, I guess that is. I mean, if they played in overlapping eras, that is very fair. But if somehow it happens to be a weak Hall of Fame class, then I'm not saying your methodology is flawed for this because you're too smart, like I warned the listeners. But that could be a way that there's the discrepancy between what seems silly when writers have no people on their ballot and writers who do. It's like the writers who always have 10 names always can look at them amongst the others and always put in the top 10, right?
That makes sense.
But at some point, there will be some who are ineligible theoretically that way that you wouldn't catch. But anyway, okay, so who's next?
Well, yeah, and Bagwell, the one other thing, you know, I think a lot of the listeners probably don't really remember fully. He was a little bit overshadowed by the guys like McGuire, Bond, Sosa. But even just looking at his numbers personally, I was absolutely amazed at how great of a hitter and pure hitter he was. When you look at it, he had .297 career batting average, but his on-base percentage was .408.
That's insane.
1,400 walks in 2,100 games.
Right. It's because he played, what, in the 90s, like most of his career? It's like somebody who hits 40 home runs is not that juicy at that time. Like,
he slugged .540 for his career.
That's amazing.
Which is like first base power hitter.
Right. Okay.
So moving down on the list, I think this was the player that I was most disappointed that didn't get in was Vladimir Guerrero.
This is his first year eligible, right?
First year eligible, and he ended up with 71.7% of the votes. So, you know, the narrative is just like a lot of writers don't like to vote for a player on their first year because they, in their minds, they see a distinction between being a first ballot Hall of Famer, meaning you get voted in on your first year, or getting voted in on your second year. It's like they reserve the first ballot Hall of Fame for Ken Griffey Jr.
Right, as if there is some distinction that they're told to make. It's like they're just totally leaving it up to themselves to say, I want to distinguish who gets in on the first try versus who doesn't, and it'll be an unwritten thing. I mean, it actually is, though. You know, I'm making fun of the distinction, but people do say first ballot Hall of Famer. But do you honestly think that makes up, that explains, aside from the total clown writers, that explains the gap between 100 and 71%?
Well, I don't
think. Or do you think there are some people who, first ballot or not, don't think he's a Hall of Famer?
I don't think that he would have received 100%.
No, but whatever the maximum is, what I'm asking, whatever the maximum theoretical vote is, if every guy thought he was worthy, the gap between that and what he got, you think all of them are, I don't give out first ballot votes guy, or do you think that some of those people think that he's not eligible ever, maybe?
I think it's largely the first ballot sort of issue we were talking about. I think that I could see a small contingent of people, especially the very sabermetric inclined individuals, maybe thinking that he's not necessarily worthy. But
what in his numbers would make a sabermetrician not love him as much as you would?
I mean, he didn't walk that much, right? So,
and he played right field, right?
Exactly. So his batting average was .318. His on-base percentage was .379.
Huh. Whoa.
You know, .379 is still a good on-base percentage, but you know, I think people have this, you know, and the other thing is fair or not. I think people have this sort of idea of Vlad as somebody who literally went up there and swung at every single pitch. And yes, he was sort of like, was very aggressive at the plate, but
that's true. What's fair or not is if you deduct points from him for that, right?
Right.
It's not fair or not because that is what he did basically. But it's not fair if you're saying because of his approach, he's any less worthy. I mean, but you can say because he got on base less, he's a little less worthy. But you pointed out you had the more hot take juice in you last night, no homo. You were like texting me like, I can't believe Vlad didn't get in. This is my Tom text voice. It's like, yo, I can't believe he didn't get in, man. He was best player in Orioles history, best player in blah, 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 best player in the Angels. I don't mean to blah, blah, blah you. Your quotes are important to me.
Well, no, he was the best player in the history of the Expos for the number of years he played for them. I mean, they obviously had Pedro, Randy Johnson, Larry Walker, but the best career with the Expos, it's Vlad. And up until Mike Trout came along, I think you can make the argument that he was probably the most productive Angel.
Well, but okay, and here's an interesting debate. Wait, but that doesn't that in and of itself, even though that is worth something, right? Like, obviously, I put stock in dominating this category or that category, right? Dominating your position for these years. But I don't think being the best player in a franchise really means anything. I mean, it does because it's like to those cities, that player is their god, right? And
yeah.
and for a museum for kids to go, oh, daddy, who's this? It's like, well, that's who I loved growing up. There's something like really cool about that. But if you're just being a total sabermetric, or not even sabermetric, just a total dick about it, then you could be like, well, what? It's a crappy franchise. I don't care that he's the best. Maybe, but it's a similar thing to you comparing them to the pool of eligible players to themselves versus not. But I actually agree with you. But it's just an interesting discussion because I could see somebody, you know, playing an intelligent devil's advocate to that reasoning.
Yeah, I mean, that's by far not. I mean, that would be like reason number.
I understand. Yeah. No. But just that fact, you know, whatever.
And, you know, the other thing is, you know, when you take a look at the voters outside of the people who look at these sort of like advanced statistics, they like to see things like MVP.
Right.
All-star games, right? And so Vlad won an MVP. He was top 10 in voting on 6 different occurrences, which is, I think, a stat I like to look at more, you know, like your top 10 MVP finishes, because it shows that you're basically like the equivalent of like an all-pro
right
in the NFL. And he had something like 8 silver sluggers. He led all major league outfielders for 4 straight years in outfield assists. So, I mean,
well, do you believe that there is some distinction between a first ballot Hall of Famer in your head and not? Do you, Tom, believe in it, that?
I think that there... I think there's a distinction between a player who gets over 96% of votes their first time and then not.
Okay, so, well, whatever it is for you, so then you think he deserved to get in.
I think he deserved
right.
to get in.
Okay, so that's fair. I do, even though I wouldn't set up the Hall of Fame, how these voters have in their head, where there's a distinction between first ballot guys and not... Even though I disagree with it, I think there is, and I do understand, like, I do, I guess, appreciate the guys, however silly that they are like, oh, he's not worthy on the first. Like, I think it's, like, appropriate that he has to wait, even though it's stupid. Like, you know what I'm saying? Given that they set up this, like, subjective rhetorical stuff around their entries, I agree with it. So we got to go on. Who's next?
Sure. So next on my list, I've got Mike Mussina, who was able to get 51.8%. He's been on the upswing. This was his 4th year on the ballot.
Oh, good. Oh, I thought he was on the ballot longer.
No, it's
good.
It's only his 4th year, and I think people are, again, you know, I keep referencing like the sabermetric and advanced analytics movement, but it's going to help him a lot as well.
Well, and also that's the way people analyze, including ourselves. That's the extreme ends of voters are Joe Beningo mutts who like are very simple-minded, and then like a computer program dickhead who is only looking at like on base and war, right? That's the extreme. So it's fair to be, you know, you're just referencing one half of the spectrum when you say that.
So when you look at Mike Mussina, first of all, like, I'm just going to kick out the very basic stats. He won 270 games versus 153 losses. And here's the key metric, which I think is what is holding people up, is he had a 3.68 ERA, which a lot of people would consider high, but let's contextualize that, right? He was pitching in the absolute prime of the steroid era. He was pitching his entire career in the AL East, which featured the Red Sox, Orioles, and the Yankees. He pitched against the Yankees championship teams for a number of years. That was like the, you know, the division with the most offense in baseball for, you know, however many years. He was facing the powerhouse Red Sox teams. And, you know, he was an ace for Baltimore. He's probably the second best pitcher in the history of the Orioles. He was arguably the ace, even with Roger Clemens and Andy Pettit on the staff. You know, and I think that people are going to kind of catch on to that because his numbers are absolutely impressive.
But you think sabermetrics will help or hurt him?
I think it's going to help.
Okay. Who's next? We got to go on.
Sure. So the next one with 21.9% of votes was Larry Walker. And he's a player who has also been picking up a little bit of steam. I think that, you know, the main knock on Larry Walker is the fact that he played most of his career at Coors Field.
I literally have no clue who he is. For anyone who doesn't know, I'm only become a baseball fan in like the last like 4 years. And so like I am a retard with anything before like the 1990s.
Gotcha. Well, so it's his seventh year on the ballot. He was the right fielder for the Rockies. He was like one of the best hitters. Well, he was one of the best hitters in the game for an extended period. Just running through his stats, 141 OPS plus, which takes into account the
league average
and the stadium he played in.
Oh, so, it does?
Yeah, so 141, you know, you look at a player like Vladimir Guerrero was 140. So same sort of league. He was a gold glove defender as well. His WAR 7 was 44.3, which, again, that puts him above Vlad and Tim Raines. And he also had 230 stolen bases. You know, he was thought of as a power hitter, but he really provided value in all aspects of the game.
It's just Coors Field, you think, that he's not in?
I think that's a large part of it.
And wait, this is his seventh year?
It's his seventh year.
Okay, so he probably is not going to get in.
I don't think he's going to get in.
Okay, so who's next?
So next on the list, and this one's going to be very controversial.
Uh-oh, get ready.
Especially when you see who's left off my list.
Controversy alert.
So I picked Billy Wagner, and he is the relief pitcher. He has 10.2% of votes, and I guess that reaction was what I had at first, but when you dig into the numbers, if 74% of people are voting for Trevor Hoffman, I think that those 74% of people are completely uninformed.
Wait, Trevor Hoffman got 74% this year?
Right.
Okay.
So when you look at Billy Wagner, he did not have the same number of saves or number of innings as Trevor Hoffman, but when you look at pure dominance, he was the second most dominant relief pitcher to Mariano, and there's really no question about that. Because you kind of dig into it, right? ERA plus, which normalizes for the field, the level of defense that is behind you. You look at Trevor Hoffman, ERA plus 141, right? And that's pretty good. Roger Clemens was 143. Billy Wagner's is 187. His WHIP was below one for his career. He had 422 saves.
To be clear, ERA plus, the higher the number, the better.
Correct.
100 is average. Above 100 is you're that much above average. That's funny. That messed with my brain for a second to hear you say something ERA and then higher is better. But yeah, no, that's okay.
And then, you know, 903 innings pitched with close to 1,200 strikeouts. I mean, if he was playing in today's day and age, he's in.
Who's next?
So next,
what are we up to? Seven? You got three more?
I got four more.
Four more.
Three of
all
them
good.
Are just going to kind of be lumped together.
Who's next?
So next on the list was Edgar Martinez, who was the DH for the Seattle Mariners during those prime years. You know, he had that big hit that scored Ken Griffey Jr. in the 95 ALDS. You know, he's, quite frankly, before David Ortiz came around, he was the best DH in the history of the game. His WAR 7, 43.6. So again, it puts him on par with, you know, Tim Raines, a little bit below Jeff Bagwell. But the fact of the matter is, like, he produced those numbers not playing defense.
Right.
So even though it doesn't take away from his WAR 7, that's just how great of a hitter he was.
Right. No, yeah, that just speaks to how well he did what he did well. All right, let's get who are the last three.
So the last three and
are Clemens, Bonds, and who is the other one? Wait,
Clemens, Bonds, and Manny Ramirez.
Oh, Manny. Okay. And,
you know, we don't even really need to go over the stats because all three of them, statistic-wise, you really just cannot make an argument that they're not Hall of Famers.
Right. No sane person can look at their numbers and say that, like, if there's no ulterior criteria, that they're not Hall of Famers. Right.
And especially for Barry Bonds.
Well, I mean, what's the story? What did they end up with this year? Do you know on the ballot?
I do. So Clemens was in his fifth year. He ended up with 54.1%.
Mm-hmm.
Bonds is in his fifth year, 53.8%. And then Manny Ramirez, this was his first year. He ended up with 23.8%.
So, I mean, obviously, right, it's like, so obviously when we talk about this, and we'll talk about this for the last couple of minutes, this aspect of voters, and now obviously we'll get to the purgatory list of players in the last 5 years in the next episode. But, yeah, it's crazy. Like, so they made the ballots public at first. Like, this year, there's a bunch of writers just decided to, like, start a movement, right? Like, they were trying to make their ballots public so people could hold accountable writers who do ridiculous stuff.
Exactly.
And so I guess it's obvious that when those votes were coming in, it looked a lot better for these guys. Because those voters are obviously likely the more progressive ones.
Yep.
And obviously the ones who are keeping Bonds and Clemens off probably don't even know how to post their ballot online. They're probably so old and out of it.
Well,
I mean, that's a little douchey of me to, like, just oversimplify that, like, only old people could not believe in steroids and only young people are okay with it. It's not that simple, but I mean, it, for me, in my experience and people I read or whatever, that for the most part, younger, sabermetric people, maybe it's just their willingness to like, not romanticize what baseball is, and maybe it's because we view it these days from a more just, like, analytical, dry standpoint than, like, the Mick, you know, you had shivers down your spine when you saw the Mick come in the field, and you knew God was creating a statue to play for you. Like, maybe it's some romantic difference in how we view baseball.
I mean, just to back up for a second, for people who are just totally unfamiliar with this situation, all three of those players were indicted or caught in some way
steroids. Thank you for the yes.
I think Clemens may not have actually been, like, caught in, like, with definitive proof, but the fact of the matter is, like, Barry Bonds.
Well, he's on the Mitchell Report, Clemens, like, which is, like, borderline shady proof, right? But there's enough circumstantial evidence that any sane person, not in court, but any sane regular person is like, I know all three of them did it.
Right. And so, like you said, you know, the ballots that were public, I think that was 70% of the ballots. I think that Clemens and Bonds were something like 68% and 66% voted in off those ballots. So I think you're definitely right, right? Those people who are printing their ballots, they're confident in the research they did because they have all of this cutting edge research and analytics. I mean,
but this isn't even about analytics necessarily, right? It's not about the numbers or not. It's about your opinion of steroids and how you view the era.
No, I agree. I'm just saying that, you know, I'm backing into the fact that the people who are publishing the vote generally are younger.
Right. And why do you think that is, though, that younger people are more okay with putting these guys in the Hall of Fame?
Well, I think it's
all I can think of is, like, what I said, is that maybe it's just the way our generations view stuff differently. Like, we're more in the fantasy stat era. Mathematics is a trend in baseball, which made me fall in love with it. And maybe, like the older gut generation is more about the Mick made you could go home after watching the Mick play and pound your wife for hours. You didn't need Viagra then.
No, I agree with you. I think that there's an open-mindedness, especially in the younger generations, that you don't see with some of these older voters, that you see that across politics, economics. Not that it's one way or the other, but, you know, there's a lot of these older voters tend to have fixed ideas.
They cheated, though, yo. Like, I mean, this is the other hand. They cheated. I only would vote for them, and I agree with your ballot mostly. I don't know, you know, like I said, I don't really know baseball history that much, but these guys I have opinions on. I would vote for them, but only for the simplicity of, like, organizing the steroid era as a clear-cut, like, we're gonna acknowledge they cheated, but we have to just look at players on face value on their stats. If I were told in my voting, like, you need to distinguish, like, who's morally worthy or not, then I would maybe leave them off. But it's just for the sake of simplicity that I would vote them in.
Yeah, and I think that I understand both sort of rationales. And I think the thing that sort of tipped me over the edge was because I didn't think that they belonged a couple years ago, but I think...
Why? Because you were like, they cheated, they're not worthy?
Yeah, I thought that they sort of just disrespected the game in that manner.
Right.
But the fact of the matter is, I personally, without definitive proof, believe that there are a number of other players who have already been voted in, and I would
venture out
that say Jeff Bagwell and Mike Piazza almost definitely did steroids. Like, so to me, it kind of, you know.
So you're like, sort of with me. It's for the sake of uniformity and neatness that, like, you can only, we just have to go by the merits of their play.
Right. And I think, you know, when you, it would be different if there was a player, say, let's say we were talking about Vladimir Guerrero and he was known to have taken steroids. I might keep him off, but these guys were just so clear cut Hall of Famers. Like, you're talking about the greatest hitter of all time, arguably the greatest right-handed starting pitcher in the modern era, and Manny Ramirez was clearly a top three hitter in the league for, what is this? It says 19 years. I mean, 555 home runs.
I wonder if Manny's case is easier to wrap my head around because, like, when, like, now and for the future, players who get caught and serve a punishment, like, he's missing those 50, 100 games in his stats. So it's almost, like, accounted for in his candidacy in a way that he got caught, right?
Right.
Bonds and Clemens never got caught, so we don't know. I mean, there is no career statistic end line punishment.
And who's to say, look, who's to say Derek Jeter didn't take steroids?
Right. Wow.
Mean, you know, like, I'm not saying he did, but we have no clue.
You heard it here first.
We have no clue at all. Curt Schilling could have taken steroids. Tim Raines could have. I mean, you look at what was, look, the players union in their negotiation with the league, a lot of what these guys took was legal. And, you know, the fact remains, like, if your career is a baseball player and there's something that gives you an edge, you know, yes, there may be physical consequences down the road, but, like, their sole purpose in making money as a career is to improve as a baseball player.
Yeah, but that's fine. That's different. That's different than, I mean, that's a whole other thing is, like, whether or not you understand it to whether or not it's cheating. You know what I mean? Like, I sure can understand everybody who cheated, but that doesn't mean it's okay. And like I said, we got to finish, but the only real reason that I would vote them in is because I don't want to have to – I just wouldn't want the pressure. I wouldn't put the pressure on myself as a writer of being the, like, arbiter of, like, who cheated and where the line is. I would just, like, for the sake of simplicity, be like, it's just going to be on face value on your stats, you're in or not, and then people will know that you cheated, basically.
Yeah, and clarity would help too, because you're allowing each individual writer, you know, nobody exactly knows, like, what the parameters they're voting on. And, you know, one other quick thing is, you know, there are only a set number of votes that each writer can vote up to 10 people. So, like, you know, this issue is impacting other players, right? Because Tim Raines very easily, like, could have been left off if more people voted for, let's say, you know, Roger Clemens.
Yeah, you mean it hurts where it's like there's a clash in votes. Like, half of the guys are voting for old school guys and half of the guys are trying to push Clemens and Bonds in.
So you're taking, like, Clemens and Bonds, they're going to be at, say, like, you know, 50 to 70% now, let's say, for the next 5 years. That's a lot of votes to be taking up.
Right, that's two spots for 70% of the ballots.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, it is vague and messy as much as I would love for it to be clear-cut. So that's it. But, yo, please subscribe, leave a review in the iTunes app, blah, 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 blah. Tweet at us. What's your Twitter?
@cap_figure.
and I'm at horrible stats, and
the worst stats
come to horrible stats. Thank you guys. Next time we'll talk about the current player Hall of Fame list that I made, and then the purgatory list. All right,
it'll get silly.